really, I'm always intrigued by this story. Many of you guys might be familiar with it, but this story really draws my attention because it's essentially like Jesus meeting with someone and like, you really get a dive into a conversation that he has with the Samaritan woman. And so to begin with, even a couple of things that to notice is that Jesus, like, even approaching this woman is just so out of this world. I mean, there are a lot of things that we notice on later on that we're like, oh my goodness, like, Jesus is just so different, you know, than anyone in his culture. So maybe some context to start with that I think I found really interesting is that as they're walking to Galilee, actually. So they were leaving Judea and actually going to a place called Galilee. And they had to go through this place, so Samaria. And I found it really interesting, as I learned a while ago, that when people would journey from Judea to, like, Galilee, they usually, especially the Jews, would go around, even though it's a direct route. So it would be like, Judea's here and, like, Galilee's here, you know. It's like you can just go right through to get to, yeah, to Galilee. But then the Jews would always actually go all the way around, because in the middle here is, like, this area where the Samaritans live. And the Samaritans and the Jews didn't really, like, get along very well. There was this tension that was there. And so I found it really interesting that Jesus actually was like, okay, we're going to go straight through this area, you know. And the disciples go off and they get food and everything. And then we see this conversation that Jesus has with this Samaritan, you know, which, you know, they're sort of like the half-bloods, you know. Or maybe in like Harry Potter like lingo, it's like the Muggles. Is it Muggles or something? The Muggles. Yeah, sorry. I'm thinking of Muggles, like those snacks. But anyway, yeah. But like, it's like sort of these people that the Jews are really looked down on, you know, because they were lesser. And so Jesus interacting not only with someone that was a Samaritan, but also someone who's like of the opposite sex, which at that time it's like men don't usually just go and talk to women, you know. And yeah, like men usually stick to themselves, and the women usually like they usually all travel together and they go get water, and then they maybe like, you know, hang out or different things like that. So it's really just bizarre situation. Well, even at the well, you know, there's no one there, and so we realize that this woman is getting water. It says around noontime, which if you think about it, it's like the hottest time of the day. You know, people don't go get water at like noon, right? So when this woman is getting water at this time, it says something about, like, you know, what's happening? Because it's usually, like, a group activity. People go there, and they, like, you know, converse, and, that you know, they get a chance to connect with each other and everything. So this woman is going there by herself. And so she's actually someone, as we later on find out, too, of her background, is that the community has really shunned. The community has really, like, seen her as, like, an outcast. And so for her to be getting water on her own at this time, says something. And then Jesus approaching her, he's actually crossing a lot of boundaries, you know, a lot of lines that are like set that are maybe everyone knows that shouldn't be crossed. So the first one being like, you know, Jesus is like someone who's like a rabbi, you know, you shouldn't be talking to someone that's like of a lower class, even in this woman who's like an outcast in her community. And she's a woman and he's a man, and also he's Jewish and she's Samaritan. So there's so many things where even this story is just bizarre, you know, in the Bible here. And I think the interesting thing about it is to explore, okay, so what is it like that we can see in the way that Jesus engages with her that shows us, I guess, Jesus' heart, and also the way that he connects with people that we can learn from, basically. So I'll begin with let's see. Yeah, because they're drawing water, right? So here they are at the well, and the Samaritan woman comes, and she's like, okay, like, hanging out there at the well. And then Jesus comes, and he's like, oh, actually, can you give me a drink? And then she's like, okay, you're coming to a well, you don't have a bucket, you don't have anything. Like, okay, this is really odd already. And, yeah, she helps them out in some ways. And the Samaritan woman says to him, it's like, okay, you shouldn't be really talking to me. And not even that, but you shouldn't be asking me for a drink at all, you know? This doesn't make sense. Just like I was saying, Jesus crossing all these boundaries and approaching her. But then Jesus responds and says, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. And so when you read that, it's like, I don't know, I'm like trying to imagine this scene in my mind. I'm like, think of, like, you know, a water fountain, you know, or something. And then, you know, you're like, okay, could you help me get a cup of water? And Jesus is like, you know what, if you would have asked me, I would have given you living water. You don't even know who I am, basically. And, like, when I think about it, I'm like, who says that? You know, usually most times, like, okay, here's some water. Okay, cool, you know, maybe chat a little bit. But Jesus, in the way that he talks to her, is like, draws on something where it's like, okay, we're here at the well. And he brings a conversation from a place of, like, you know, you're thinking about just, like, normal water and, like, you know, every day you got to come out and get water from this well. But I want to actually engage with you and actually talk to you about something deeper. And I guess piques her curiosity in some ways, too, where it's like, you know what? If you knew who I was, yeah, you would be asking me for something even more. I have this thing called living water, which then she's really curious because she's like, wait a minute, you don't have anything to draw the water with, you don't have a bucket or anything. And what are you talking about? Where are you going to get this living water? Like, are you greater than our father Jacob who, like, built this well? It's like, are you greater than people that even, like, you know, built this well for us? Are you offering something that's greater than this, you know? And so I think it's interesting because Jesus shows us what it means to, I guess, go deeper into a deeper type of thirst, you know, that he might be, like, pointing out. And so I would wanted to use the board. I don't know if that would be challenging. Maybe someone can help me move that over. I think this will be better visually put out. Okay, thanks. Is that okay? Okay, can everyone see it though? Okay. So. Thank you. So I wanted to explain a little bit. Maybe this will be helpful because it's a bit more visual. So I call this the onion diagram. So the point is to not, well, it's not just to make you cry, like Shrek would say. But people have layers. We can sort of journey through, I guess, what happens in a conversation and explore what are the different layers in a person as they're thinking through, as Jesus is journeying through this woman here. So, the beginning of this conversation, they're just talking about water, right? So we have water, and they're at the well, so it's about drawing water. And so on the outside, like, okay, like, you know, seems like a convenient topic because they're there. And then later on, it's like you begin to see that the deeper conversation starts to go into this idea of thirst. So basically there's like the physical thirst around the physical dimension here. But then we begin to see that actually there are thirsts in this woman's life that's deeper. So this is the interactive part. What do you guys think are some things that this woman is thirsty for from what we read from the story? Are there any thoughts?
Friendship,
yeah, okay. Yeah, because she's someone that's an outcast. So does that seem any other things that she's thirsty for? Acceptance. Yeah, sort of like connected too, right? Acceptance. And then there's a sticky situation, I guess. Well, not sticky, but I would feel really uncomfortable, I think. Because when the woman says, you know, give me this water so I won't get thirsty. And then Jesus says, oh, go call your husband. And you're sort of like, okay, what does this have to do with it? And then she's like, well, I don't really have a husband. And Jesus is just like, oh, yeah, you're right. Because when you say you have no husband, that's true because you actually, you had five husbands and the man that you now have is not your husband. And it's one of those situations where I'm like, oh, my goodness, Jesus, I can't believe you brought that up. It's like, okay, that's like a really sensitive topic, you know. And at the same time, I think it points to something, right, that in this woman's life where she has all these relationships in her life, maybe with these men, right? But at the same time, there's like no one that is actually committed to her, or that she's even committed to. And so as well as friendship as well, maybe I'm longing for like a meaningful like intimacy or a meaningful relationship with like a man as well. And then it's connected to the idea of acceptance. So there's some themes of like relationships that are here that we can see in this woman's life that she's looking for. Are there any other things that we find, discover?
Friendship.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
That's right. Yeah, maybe a sense of, like, respect and also just, like, dignity, you know? So, yeah, we see these different themes in her life. And I think it's actually interesting because when we start looking at it, there are actually themes in our own lives as well, right? These are the things that not only for our, like, non-Christian friends, but also for our own lives, these are things that we're looking for. And it's interesting because I look at this woman's life and I'm like, oh yeah, like, I'm not living like a scandalous life like she is and everything. But the things that she's longing for are the same things that I'm also like longing for as well. Whether it's even simple things like acceptance, where I'm like, I want to be someone who others would accept. But not only that, like I want to be approved by people, or like I know for a theme in my own life is that, you know, I recently my parents came to visit and everything, and even though they see me as like, oh yeah, like I'm independent in some ways, but there are certain times where I really want them to validate like the choices that I make, you know, and also I want them to like accept me for the passions that I have and the interests that I have. And a lot of times, like, maybe they don't understand completely, you know. They're like, oh yeah, Evelyn, like, you know, you do your music thing and your campus thing, and we want to support you. But there's a big part of it where my mom still sometimes is like, oh, you know, maybe, yeah, you could come back to Hong Kong and teach her different things, you know. Which I'm like, oh, I know they really care. And at the same time, I'm like, okay, like, if God calls me, I maybe would consider it too, for sure. But it's hard because I'm, like, still wrestling through. I'm like, oh, I really just want my mom to accept me, like, for fully who I am. And I realize I'm like, part of that is also wrestling with maybe questions of identity, like who am I, you know, and how do people see me, and where do I fit in this world? And so all these different themes, I think, are themes that are themes in our own lives. So that's something I guess I encourage you to look and explore, where it's like, what are those common themes that keep on coming up in my own life that are still places that I'm trying to figure out, or like still like areas that I maybe like struggle with, you know. Where I really want people to respect me, I really want people to accept me, and I really want a sense of like worth as well. So all these are themes that can be surfaced, and usually it's in like everyday things, right? So I think a common, a good way to explore what these deeper themes are in our own lives and in our friends' lives is asking some questions. For example, what are some of our fears? That's one of them. So are there some things in your life that you're really fearful of, like, losing? That you're like, I don't know if I can live without this, you know? And, like, I've talked to, for example, give you some examples, one girl that I had met probably a few years back, and I had met her because I was we were doing surveys, and then she was one of the people that were interested. She was interested in learning more about God. So I met up with her. And when I met her, she was very, like, open, and she was like, yeah, I really want to learn more about God and different things. So I walked through the gospel with her, and she came to a point where she's like, yeah, I think, like, this is something I want in my life. I really want God to be a part of my life. And I was, like, excited for her, because I was like, yeah, I mean, this is going to be a journey. It's not just a one-time thing, so it's going to be important that, you know, maybe learning more about God would involve, like, reading the Bible, and maybe, like, being connected to a community, and learning how to pray, all these different things. So I explained all these things to her. She was like, yeah, I want to grow in these areas. And so, well, the natural step was, like, okay, do you want to meet up again next week? And then so we can actually walk through some of these things. And then she was just like, you know, I can't meet up again. And I was like, oh, like, what's the matter, you know? And it was like the first 2 weeks of school or something like that. And I was like, you know, we can find a time that works for you or something. And she's like, no, I don't think I can meet up at all, even though I want to learn more about this. And I was like, oh, why is that? And she's like, oh, because my parents, like, you know, they expect me to be home at a certain time. And I'm like, okay, like, I've heard some of those similar situations where, okay, like, you know, don't stay out too late sort of thing. So I'm like, okay, we can work around it. And she's like, well, actually, I really sense, like, I just have a lot of pressure to get into med school. She was, like, in first year, though, of, like, her undergrad. So she's like, yeah, but I have to get into med school, and then my parents, like, really expect me to, you know, be really diligent in studying and doing these things, and I really feel like I need to accomplish this as well. And so I was like, okay. So it was interesting because basically coming out of that, she was like, you know, I can't meet because, like, this thing in my life, and I think beginning to realize, like, her fear was, like, I don't know what I would do if I don't get into med school. if I don't know how to face my parents. So it's a mixture of things where it's not only academics, but it's like this idea of like, what are my parents going to think of me? And I have to live up to these expectations that they have. So it was really challenging because basically coming out, I was like, you know, I really want to connect with you and help you grow more. But for her, she was just in a place where this was controlling her whole life, you know, to a point where she's like, I can't come, like, my parents basically checked the bus schedules to make sure that I arrive home at a certain time. She's like, if you get on this bus, then she should be home at this time. And they would call her if she doesn't arrive or different things. So they're just, like, a whole new level of, like, maybe, like, tiger parents, I guess. But, like, I'm like, wow, like, how do I help someone, like, in that, you know? And it was really challenging because I'm like, yeah, I texted her and continue to try to connect with her. But, yeah, it was just this one thing in her life had, like, complete control. And so, in some ways, I think the center of each person, there's always something. There's some God, basically. And that thing in their life that represents, like, a God is going to be what will define, like, their decisions they make, like, even ourselves, it will define the decisions we make. And our God will define, like, the way that we interact with people. It will define the way that, yeah, we are, like, the way that we view ourselves as well. So some of the ways to discover, I guess, what are those themes in our lives is, like, yeah, what are some of our fears, you know? And, like, the things that we feel that we can't, like, not live, like, without. There's a lot of negatives. But the thing that we feel like, man, if we don't have it, we're not going to be able to survive. So you slowly realize, I think, even maybe in the friendships that we have or in the coworkers, the people in our lives, that there are probably these themes, you know, usually the things that they talk about the most. Usually things like, the things that they're most nervous about, you know. Maybe you even had chances to even pray for your friends in your life about these things. But you'll begin to realize when you get to know the people in your life, there are certain themes that will come up. So are there some topics that you can think of in your friends' lives that they talk a lot about? Or that is consuming them, or is a source of, like, fear for them. Worldly achievement. All right.
Family harmony.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure everyone's okay with each other. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The job market. Okay. Yeah, actually, I've talked to more people that are in a place where they're like, oh, I really need to find a job that's stable, that's secure, you know.
Social
acceptance. Yeah, okay. I think these are, yeah, deeper themes you guys are touching on already. Okay, so just all the tasks and responsibilities. Maybe a role that you have. Okay. So that thought might be helpful, maybe to pick a few and being like, okay, so what does it look like to journey with someone in some of these themes? So, for example, I think this seems to be like a pretty common theme. Like we all have different roles and responsibilities in our lives. So whether it's like, okay, I have commitments to my family, I have commitments to my job as well, and also commitment to, like, yeah, even friendships and, like, my social circles, right? So I think a struggle sometimes, like, maybe you guys can identify, was like, I feel like I don't have enough time for all the things I need to do, right? And probably a common topic even amongst friends, like, oh my goodness, I'm so overwhelmed, I have all these things and I can't get to it all. And then I think the deeper question that if there's space for that and for us to evaluate our own hearts but also to connect with people is asking the questions of, like, okay, so we have all these different tasks and different things that we do, but do you think it's actually important to look at how do we weigh what's important in our lives, you know? Actually, how we weigh what's important in our lives is probably defined by some values that we have that are deeper. Like, what are the things that are important in my life, right? So on the outside, the layers, like, sometimes our behavior, or, like, what are we doing with our time, basically, is on the outside. And then deeper down is, like, maybe it has to do with our attitude towards the things that we make our choices in. But further in is actually the values, like, what are the things that are... Maybe just died. Is that okay? Hello? So a good indicator of like what is of value to us is actually where do we spend our time and energy the most, right? Where are we investing our energy and time? And then a lot of times we realize, I'm investing a lot of times in things that actually don't feel like are of that importance. Like, I value my family a lot, but I actually don't even spend enough time with them. So then we begin to realize and surface these themes. So sometimes a good way to ease into deeper topics is to ask questions. So you might notice some things in your friend's lives where you're like, okay, this person is just, I don't know, this friend is a workaholic. They just work like 24/7. Even though they keep on saying they want to spend time with their family. So then even surfacing, it's like, well, okay, you sound like you want to invest more time in your family. So, you know, are there some things that you think need adjustment in your life? You know, like what would your ideal life be, you know? So beginning to ask questions so that they begin to see those themes in their lives is probably more effective than you just like telling them. I think through experience as well, it's like people are not as receptive when you just go in and, like, tell them what to do. Like, I don't like that personally, too, right? That's why I think my parents sometimes drive me crazy because they just want to tell me what to do, you know? So, like, just tidy your bed. I'm like, no, I don't want to now. So one of the huge things is, like, how do you help them to realize that themselves? So when you ask these questions, like, okay, we see that there's a lot of responsibilities and roles that people are juggling. But actually, I think a theme that you can go into is the question of, like, purpose. So why do you do the things that you do? And why do you, spend the time the way that you do right now? And so a question of purpose seems a bit more like, okay, this is a broader and deeper topic. And so sometimes I find it helpful to use, like, analogies. So there's a couple, on several occasions, I sometimes use an analogy of, I take up my cell phone, and I'm like, you know, I feel like our lives, it's sort of like a cell phone. Well, I have my iPhone. And it sometimes gives me a lot of problems and it freezes. But I'm like, okay, I have my iPhone here. It's not like the iPhone 5 or whatever. It's just like iPhone 4. It's not the most up-to-date. But it works for me. And I look at my phone and I'm like, the phone is here so that the primary purpose of a phone is to make phone calls and to receive phone calls. However, a lot of times, my phone can't even do that because the network is down or something. Or like it freezes because it's like so jammed with stuff. And I start looking and I'm like, because I look at my phone and I'm like, I have all these different apps on it. You know, and I have all these different functions. I can listen to music. I can, like, do videos. I can do all this stuff on it. But I'm like, if the phone can't make a phone call or receive a phone call, it's not actually fulfilling its purpose, right? So that is an example. I think for our lives is similar, where our life, we're made with a purpose. And sometimes we get lost in all the busyness of stuff, and we're packing ourselves with so many different things in our lives that we get lost and we actually lose sight of, like, our purpose. And maybe the question is like, well, that's a big question. Like, so what is our purpose then? If our phone is to make phone calls and receive phone calls, then what is our life purpose? And I would usually put out an invitation where it's like, maybe it's good to consider what our purpose through actually connecting with the designer, you know. So I would put it out there where it's like, you know, it's a good place to start to actually connect with the person that designed the phone, for example, and be like, okay, what was it designed for? What was it made for? And so for our lives as well, it's like, you know, if it was possible, usually I put that question out there, if it's possible to connect with the designer and the creator of your life, like, would you be interested or curious about that, you know? And some people are like, whoa, like, I never thought about that, you know? Or they might be like, I don't know about this whole God thing, you know? But I'm like, yeah, have you ever thought that maybe God does have a purpose? Or would you be open to exploring or even asking questions in that area? And so that opens up space to... yeah, really converse and talk more, not only about purpose, but like actually about what if there was a God? Could there be a God? And what would his plan be and his purpose? So that's one way to jump into a theme. And it's like maybe if we came to know our purpose, we can live out our responsibilities and our roles in a way that is actually reflective of what we're made for, you know. So that way we can actually be more free and more like, more grounded and rooted as well. In who we are. So that's one theme that you can surface in people's lives as an example. Is there one that you guys wanted to look more into? Or that you're curious about learning? This is just me like thinking how I would have a conversation with someone. Let's see. Like, for example, maybe some of them are similar themes. But if there's a theme of, like, for example, relationships, I'll pick maybe family harmony or something. This desire to be in a family that, you know, we're not, like, fighting or have differences and disagreements and stuff. But, I think, well, all of us have families, right? And that's, like, a common topic. If you can talk to people or you ask them, it's like, oh, how are things going in your family? And you begin to realize it's, like, a wide range of things, right? Where there's people that are like, oh, okay, I think I have it all together. Our family is all put together and it's okay. But deeper down, I think we all know, whenever you put people together in the same space, there's going to be, like, spaces where there's tension, right? So it has to do with relationships with one another. So I think a deeper theme here is, like, relationships and how do we be in relationships with people. Let's see. So I think a theme, there could be many of them, but my own life, I think in my family relationships, I often have the theme of I want them to understand me, and I want them to actually, as well as like, I guess, them just knowing, oh, okay, this is what Evelyn does. I really want them to connect with me in a way where I'm like, they understand and they want to learn about my world and engage. So one thing I always want to do is like, I want my family to meet some of the students I work with or something, or have dinner with them, so it's like they get to see a part of my world, you know. And what I do, like, daily as well. So in my deep desire for that, I mean, there's been times when I've actually been really, like, disappointed or really, like, sad as well, because sometimes, like, my parents have assumptions, you know. They're like, oh, you know what, like, the students don't really care. It's like they're going to just go graduate and they're not going to be around anymore, you know. So I think my mom sometimes, she wants to be like, Evelyn, she wants to help me think about things for the future and everything, but sometimes communicates in a way that's, like, hurtful or, like, just, oh, I feel like you don't understand me, you know. Or she make assumptions about like certain students that I work with, or like even the friends in my life. They're like, oh, you know, maybe they're not really there for you. They might just want to take advantage of you, or different things like that, right? So those places where I'm like, oh, I can get so frustrated or upset, right? And I think one thing that God really taught me was in the process of the last few years of connecting with my family and asking God for help is like, okay, there are some things that I think it's impossible for me to change overnight in the lives of my parents. And also they're shaped by their parents and their upbringing and all these things. That's like a whole ball, it's like a whole ball of mess that I can't even dig into. But I realized one thing was, God was challenging me, is that, are you willing to step into their world then? And so I was like, but I want them to understand me, you know? And my God was just over and over being like, Evelyn, are you willing to understand where they're coming from though? And so I was like, but they're my parents, you know? They're like, they should have things together. They're adults, you know? And so it was very humbling, because I think as I began to learn about their world, I started to go to my mom. She was teaching high school still back then. So she runs actually a high school Christian group in her school. And I decided to actually drop by. And I was like, Mom, like, can I come by, or can I help in any way, you know? So I actually went in and I got to meet the students that she works with, you know? And her heart is really there, because she's actually led quite a few people to faith through bringing them to church and, like, really caring for her students that way. So I'm like, we share way more in common than we think, you know. We both have the same heart, but she's always trying to convince me to go to high school or something like that. And I'm like, no, university students are really, like, you know, important at this time. And so I think through it all, God showed me, it's like, we have way more common ground than we think. And it's actually neat, because in some ways I'm like, she's reaching high school students, and then I get to reach university students. And I also shared over one time, like, yeah, Mom, you know, like, I get to work with people that are going to be teachers one day, too, you know. So she's like, oh, I never really thought about that, you know. But this was after a lot of, like, conversations and sometimes disagreements and things. And I think through it all, it's like actually finding common ground of the people in our lives and being willing to step into their world. And I think for me personally, I think there were times when I was, like, really nervous or skeptical, not only my family, but stepping into the world of my non-Christian friends, where I'm like, they just party all the time and, like, I don't know, it's like totally a different culture, you know? Like, I go to, like, fellowship on Friday and Saturday nights. This was, like, in my, like, couple of years in university. And the other people, like, it seems like so, like, their world is so different, you know? But slowly I realize, I'm like, well, usually on a Saturday morning when they're a little bit hungover and they're more mellow and stuff like that, I get to have these amazing conversations with them, because they actually are really engaged with the world, you know? And they actually are looking for the same thing that I am. So another theme I see is, like, similar to acceptance, it's like belonging, where I saw the friends that the non-Christian friends in my life during university years, I'm like, they just want to belong as well. Like, they just are looking for a community. And some are finding it through go to the house parties, go and, like, you know, connect with people by, like, going to the bars and, like, clubbing and all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm just looking for it in the same way, but at church and trying to find a place where people get to really know me, right? So I think it's through that, like, maybe one thing to encourage you guys is, like, as we journey with people, we're going to learn more about how the gospel is real, like how God is real in all these areas, that he's not just a disconnected part of our lives, you know, but actually God wants to speak into all these things. He wants to speak into our longing for acceptance. He wants to speak into our roles and responsibilities, how we organize our time. Like, he wants to be intimately involved with even our family relationships, even the ugly parts, you know. And so I think the amazing thing about it is, like, just like in this story, it's like Jesus actually walks into this woman's life that is, like, in shambles. It's like a mess in many ways. If people would meet her, they'd be like, yeah, like, why would you want to spend time with her, you know? So I find it interesting because, yeah, Jesus really shows us what that looks like to love and care for people. So a few things, I guess, that I've learned that's key on a heart level for us is, I say a few things. Like, it's so important to, like, love. I mean, it seems really obvious and broad, and, you know, we sing that song as well, you know, love, love, you know, and we dance with our arms like this for the kids. Yeah, exactly. So love is, like, a huge part of it is actually we need to be able to love people where they're at. And so we see in Jesus' story, it's like, well, this woman was someone that is seemingly so unlovable, you know, even the men would, like, all leave her and everything, but Jesus, like, chose to enter into her world. So for us, it's like a tangible way to, like, love people is beginning to walk into people's world. And I think one thing that's helped me a lot is, like, to love people is to cultivate, like, a heart of prayer. When I start praying for people, it's really hard to, like, hate them or get, like, there's people in my life that I'm really frustrated about sometimes, and I think the one conviction that God's always brought, whenever I start praying for them, my heart starts to change. So it changes, and it's a huge shift where it's like in the beginning it'll be like, God, I just need that person to get their act together because they're driving me crazy. To like actually, okay, God, I think that you need to work on my heart a little bit, you know, because I think I have some attitude issues, and also, like, the reason why I'm frustrated is like I have this maybe control complex where I just want to change people and make them the way I want them to be, right? So I think one of the huge things in loving people is like starting to pray for them. And then as we start praying for them, we actually want to care for them or hear them out. So another thing is to listen. And seems really basic, but like listening makes a huge deal. Like that, the difference I was talking about is like not just to tell people what to do, but when you actually take the time to listen. And a huge a skill that's really helpful is to ask questions. So the basics of asking questions. One really easy question to ask if you're, like, stuck, is just like, oh, why, you know? So they're talking about something, they're really annoyed about it, or something, it's like, oh, like, why is that bothering you, you think? Or what do you think, yeah, are some of the, some of your own emotions, like, how do you feel about this? Like, why is this important for you? So whenever you ask a question, it's more inviting for people, and also you're saying that, hey, I'm listening to you. Even if you just repeat what they say and ask, oh, is this what you mean? I think it goes a long way to caring for people. And you realize, too, I'm like, what reading through the scriptures, Jesus, well, knows everything pretty well. He knows a lot of stuff, and he's pretty wise, I would say. But he takes the time to ask people questions. And, yeah, even in this story here, right, I think he'd ask a couple of questions. Well, will you give me a drink? And he actually, some of the parts where it's like, are we willing to even ask for help in the people that don't know Christ in our lives? So in a way where we're like, actually, I want to ask you for some of your opinions and your thoughts as well. So as much as maybe we can also point people to God, it's like, are there times in our lives where we can actually ask them, it's like, well, what do you think about the situation? And be willing to share our struggles with the friends in our lives as well. And that goes a long way. And next thing is learn. So being willing to learn with the people that we're journeying with. And so one thing I always say, it's like, if the gospel is good news, it's going to be good news in every circumstance. And in every person's life, there's going to be some way that the gospel will be speaking good news into people's lives. So are we willing to learn about how the gospel is good news to people? And I remember when I first, when I spent some time in Victoria, I was actually really intimidated because it was a campus where people were like really gung-ho and active about like the environment and about like social issues and everything. And I was like, I didn't really even know that there were all these things that were happening around the world. And there are people that would be like, okay, you got to come out. We're having a tree hugging contest to raise money, blah, blah. And I was like, a tree hugging contest? I'm like, what is that? You know? So there are just things where I'm like, I am so like I don't know where I belong in this place, right? So when I was going out to Victoria, I was intimidated by these people, but slowly I was like, okay, God, starting to pray for them and ask questions, because I was like, I don't even know what this stuff is, like, that you guys really care about, but tell me more, you know? And, I met a friend, a student who was, he was part of the socialist club on campus, and to be honest, I was like, I don't really know what a socialist is. So I was really uninformed, basically. But after I embarrassed myself a little bit in the beginning, it was great because I actually learned about, I was like, as I'm learning about it, I'm like, oh, so a socialist is sort of like a communist? And he's like, well, not really. But I'm like, but it's really interesting because it's like this idea of sharing everything. And so as I'm learning about this fellow, his name was Matthew or something, he was telling me about just why his heart was like, I really want to see the world change in this way, where people can actually share resources and the poor wouldn't be neglected, all this stuff. And I was like, wow, it does sound really appealing, you know? And then as we journeyed more, it was neat because I learned from him. But one of the themes I also learned was I started asking questions. I'm like, you know, this ideal world that you talk about, do you think it's possible? Like, why isn't it happening if it's, like, so amazing, like you describe it? And then as we talked about it, we started exploring. And he's like, yeah, I guess what happens is whenever people have power, they end up abusing it. And I was like, oh, you're right about that. And I'm like, yeah, you see in our culture where it's like, even if we put the poorest of the poor and they got to lead our country or something, at some point, when they have that power, they might become power hungry and then use that power for their own like selfish means or something. So I'm like, yeah, I guess the problem might be the individual then, you know? Because otherwise, I mean, the world could be really a better place, you know, if people really governed in a way that's just, in a way that cares for the poor and all this stuff. And so when we talked about that, I was like, well, what do you think? Maybe deep down we're looking for a leader that's really for the cause of the people, and would actually care for the marginalized, and would care for the poor, and would actually stand up for the people, and not themselves. And then he's like, yeah, that would be really amazing. I'm like, well, have you ever considered, like, there's a leader that I know of, like, the person of Jesus, you know? We talked about a bunch of other leaders in the world, too, but I was like, well, have you considered maybe that Jesus was actually an activist? He was an activist for change, you know? And the interesting thing was, he didn't come as, like, this huge, he didn't bring a huge military campaign or something, but he came, and he actually was engaging with the poorest of the poor, you know? And he would, like, the story itself, you know? He was engaging with a Samaritan woman. And at the same time, I think the biggest thing is he actually wanted to change the condition of people's hearts. So it wasn't just about changing the behavior of people, but he's like, there's a deeper issue, and that's because people are selfish. And how are we going to turn selfish hearts into, like, selfless hearts? And it's not possible without dealing with the issue of this idea called sin, you know, and brokenness that's in our world. So as I talked to him, I was like, yeah, I was learning new things about the gospel, because I'm like, that's what Jesus did. He was an activist in our world, but he brought change that was unlike any other change. And so I encourage actually this fellow afterwards, as I share the gospel through this way, I encourage him to read through Acts. And I'm like, I think you'll be really encouraged to read about it. There's a community that's described in the Bible that is sort of what you're talking about, but at the heart of it, there's God in the center. So maybe you can like start thinking and considering what that would look like. How about for your own life? Do you want a life that would be less self-centered and actually more, for the sake of other people? Or, well, you need another source in your life. You need God and Jesus in your life. So as we talk to people, I think the final part is leading people. So as we learn with people, eventually we get to a point where we actually lead people. And the point is not to lead people to, you know, be more like us, but actually to lead people to, like, Christ that's there in the center. And I find, like, it's interesting because when we actually love people and listen to them and are willing to learn of them, they're way more willing to actually walk with us, especially if we're willing to be vulnerable with them and honest with them. And at the heart of it, I think maybe a slight distinction I wanted to highlight is that there's a tendency sometimes for us to, I guess, the perspective that non-Christians might have on us is like Christian culture. They'd be like, oh yeah, you do that church thing, you know, and then you pray a lot, and maybe like, you guys are really devout and stuff like that and religious, so I don't know, I can't be that person, like, I'm just not like that. And so it's really interesting because people's perception of God and spirituality might a lot be around just Christian culture. So the shift between is like, how do we help people see Christ more, you know? And our Christian culture might be like a living out of like Christ in our lives, but if we can actually get to the question, I always say it's like if we're able to get to the question of like, who do you think Jesus is though? You know, because I really believe that anyone that encounters Jesus, just like the Samaritan woman, just like many other people, they can't be unchanged. Like, Jesus has something about him that like draws people, you know. And it's like, actually Gandhi once said this, like, I really like your Jesus, I just don't really like your Christians, you know. I like your Christ, I don't like your Christ followers. So it's really interesting because I'm like, at the same time, it's like, hopefully our lives actually are lives that exemplify Christ. But for us, it's like, how do we get people to a point where we listen to them and learn from them? And then eventually it's like, yeah, we actually lead them to Jesus so that they can have a chance to respond to what Jesus is offering. And we actually see it in Jesus' example here in the story, because it's interesting. She goes from like talking about, you know, water to thirst to maybe like, you're looking for something, you know, maybe intimacy and acceptance that you can't find. And eventually they have this conversation about worshiping, right? Because the woman is like, okay, you're something different, you know. You're like different than, maybe you're a prophet or something, but I don't really know. However, you're a Jew, and like, I'm a Samaritan person, so I don't even know if I can make sense of this. And maybe a familiar parallel to our modern day would might be like, you know, you're Christian, but you know, I'm from a Buddhist family, or like, oh, I'm like, my family were like atheists, or actually, I'm not religious really, you know, but you're a Christian, so maybe you have these different views, right? So we see actually how Jesus engages with her is actually to draw the Samaritan woman in a way where it's like, actually, you're like, she's like, believe me, you know, if we're talking about worship, it's like the worshiper like is not worshiping the Father, neither not, it's not about where you worship. It's not even about all the, you know, cultural things that we do. Maybe you have a perception of Christians, you know. But Jesus puts the question for us, like, you know, if it's possible, it's like, maybe consider this. Those who want to connect with God and worship God need to worship Him in spirit and in truth. So there's this question where it's like, you got to really know who this God is, you know, and it's possible to know Him. And the woman is like, well, I don't really know. Like, this is all so much, you know. I don't, like, I just met you at the well, basically, like, half an hour ago, and now you're telling me about my whole life, which is crazy, and now you're actually telling me that I can know God? That's bizarre, you know? And Jesus is like, well, here it is, you know, what if you can know God and actually engage with Him and worship Him and come to, like, have a relationship with Him? And the woman's like, well, okay, maybe one day, if I hear from someone that is really, like, the Messiah, like, the chosen one, like, the anointed one, then when He comes, He can explain all these things to me. And then it's like, I just love it. It's like the bam, you know, because Jesus is just like, yeah, that one you're looking for, right here, talking to you right now, you know. I can just imagine her being like, oh my goodness, like, no way. And we read it later on too. It's like, immediately what happens is she ends up leaving her water jar, which was why she was at the well, to get water. Leaves that behind, goes back into the village, and goes into the village where he's like, guys, you guys got to check this out. I don't know the whole story or deal yet, but you got to check out, like, who is this person? Is this the Messiah? Like, could this be the Christ? So I think even for us asking, it's like, have we encountered Christ in this way, where we come to know who He really is? That as we're wrestling through even these questions in our lives, like, we're looking for all these things. And then are we actually being able to see that God is the one who is, like, speaking into our circumstances, and Jesus is actually real in all our struggles, our circumstances, real enough so that it's not only for us, but it's also for the people in our lives, that we would actually go out and say, hey, could this really be it? Would you come and explore with me, you know? Not that I have all the answers, but let's, like, listen and learn together in this journey. So that's a little bit of insight of this from this passage. Do you guys have any questions about this passage? I just talked a lot. Supposed to be more interactive. Or any insights that you guys have found interesting from this passage? Yeah, Dave? Okay.